Following are comments on William Shakespeare's The Two Noble Kinsmen, Act II. They have all the world in their chamber. The jailer speaks with his daughter's wooer about a dowry. The daughter enters with straw for the quarters of the new prisoners, Palamon and Arcite. She is understandably impressed with these two young men. In Act II, Scene 1, the jailer explains to his daughter's persistent suitor that he doesn't have much money for a dowry, but the suitor is not put off, and seems ready to provide an indication of the daughter's consent to the match. That will have to wait, though, until the royal wedding and military hubbub is over in Athens, now that Theseus is home. Both the jailer and his daughter are full of high praise for the new celebrity prisoners, Palamon and Arcite, with the daughter saying, quote unquote, "The prison itself is proud of him, and they have all the world in their chamber." Act 2, Scene 1, lines 23 through 24. Indeed, the two men will soon say much the same thing of themselves, so close are they as friends and cousins. The jailer's daughter closes out the scene with an observation about the noteworthy new prisoners. Quote unquote, "It is a holiday to look on them. Lord, the difference of men." Act 2, Scene 1, lines 53 through 54. One hopes she doesn't say that within easy hearing of the steadfast wooer, but unfortunately he's still standing near her. In any case, the daughter's effusive remark resembles what the wicked Goneril says in Act 2, Scene 4 of King Lear, about the distinction between her husband, Albany, and the passionate natural son of Gloucester, Edmund. The jailer's daughter's words, however, remain innocent. "Behold and wonder! By heaven, she is a goddess! Palamon and Arcite complain about prison, but take consolation from the prospect of greater togetherness. Palamon catches sight of Amelia in the garden, falls in love, and informs Arcite. When Arcite also falls in love with Amelia, he and Palamon become rivals. Arcite is set free and banished from Athens, but Palamon is moved to a cell from which he can no longer see Amelia." In Act 2, Scene 2, Palamon grieves in Arcite's presence at the prospect of spending the rest of his life in prison. Quote unquote, "Oh, never shall we two exercise like twins of honor our arms again and feel our fiery horses like proud seas under us." Act 2, Scene 2, lines 17 through 20. Arcite agrees, but he adds still more things to lament, particularly, quote unquote, "the sweet embraces of a loving wife." Act 2, Scene 2, line 30. "They will both die," Palamon comes round to saying, as, quote unquote, "children of grief and ignorance." Act 2, Scene 2, line 55. That is, as the Norton editor glosses the terms, "sad and unknown," quote unquote. Palamon and Arcite are chivalric heroes, so what could be worse than dying in prison, no longer able to demonstrate their worth as men and warriors? We may be reminded of Alfred Tennyson's poem, Ulysses, wherein the Ithacan king, back home, but desperately missing his old adventures, cries out, quote unquote, "How dull it is to pause, to make an end, to rust unburnished, not to shine in use, as though to breathe were life." And yet, Arcite soon pivots to a very different view of his and his cousin's predicament. He sees two great benefits, quote unquote, "to hold here a brave patience and the enjoying of our griefs together." Act 2, Scene 2, lines 59 through 60. As Duke Senior says in As You Like It, Act 2, Scene 1, quote unquote, "sweet are the uses of adversity, which, like the toad, ugly and venomous, wears yet a precious jewel in his head." With enough such rhetoric, captivity comes to look a lot like freedom. Arcite even says that marriage would only come between him and Palamon. Quote unquote, "were we at liberty, a wife might part us lawfully, were business." Act 2, Scene 2, lines 88 through 89. Arcite goes on to list the things that might break these Renaissance-era BFFs apart. But alone with each other in their mutual cell, there would be no intrusions by others, and their friendship would be long and unperturbed. Says Arcite, quote unquote, "A thousand chances were we from hence would sever us." Act 2, Scene 2, lines 94 through 95. Ordinary life, ordinary society is disintegrative and corruptive, while the little society of two that Palamon and Arcite imagine would last to the end of their lives without degradation or decay. "No," they gush, "their love is truly exemplary." Quote unquote. "Is there a record," asks Palamon, quote unquote, "of any two that loved better than we do, Arcite?" Act 2, Scene 2, lines 114 through 115. "No, there isn't," replies Arcite. "Well then," as John Donne says in The Canonization, quote unquote, "countries, towns, courts, beg from above a pattern of your love." It's deliciously ironic, then, that just as the two young men are practically falling over themselves with deep affection, Emilia, strolling in the garden at the base of the prison, asks her waiting woman what kind of flower both of them presently behold, and the answer comes back, quote unquote, "Narcissus." Emilia's response to that is, quote unquote, "That was a fair boy, certain, but a fool to love himself. Were there not maids enough?" Act 2, Scene 2, lines 120 through 121. Also wonderfully ironic is Emilia's comment to the waiting woman, quote unquote, "Men are mad things." Act 2, Scene 2, line 126. That will be a pretty good description of Palamon and Arcite in no time. Palamon catches sight of Emilia in the garden and is at once struck with Cupid's arrow. Quote unquote, "Behold and wonder, by heaven she is a goddess." Act 2, Scene 2, lines 133 through 134. Just then, Emilia says she prefers roses above any other flower, and when asked why, she responds, quote unquote, "It is the very emblem of a maid, for when the west wind courts her gently, how modestly she blows and paints the sun with her chaste blushes." Act 2, Scene 2, lines 137 through 140. Palamon and Arcite are noticing and talking about the two women, while the latter are concentrating on each other. Arcite now espies Emilia and at once falls in love. Palamon asks eagerly, quote unquote, "You love her then?" And is answered, quote unquote, "Who would not?" Act 2, Scene 2, line 159. As always, there is a strong competitive force at work in desire. As has been said many times, we desire what others desire. That is, at least partly what makes someone or something desirable. See, for example, René Girard's book, Violence and the Sacred. Palamon is instantly seized with jealousy and blurts out, quote unquote, "I saw her first." "No matter," says Arcite, quote unquote, "I saw her, too." Act 2, Scene 2, lines 160 and 162. Both arguments are silly, since neither man's first vision of the lady proves ownership. But such is the stuff of immature erotic passion. Soon, the two knights fall to further articulating their supposed claims on Emilia's love. Arcite says that Palamon's desire for Emilia remains abstract, merely ideal, whereas, he says, he himself will, quote-unquote, "love her as a woman, to enjoy her." Act 2, Scene 2, line 165. No Petrarchan, impossibly distant love objects for Arcite. But Palamon, in return, asserts that his love is superior. Who will keep Arcite from loving Emilia? "Why," says Palamon, quote-unquote, "I that took possession first with mine eye of all those beauties." Act 2, Scene 2, lines 168 through 170. That's quite an imperial gaze, he's asserting. It almost goes without saying, given that such assumptions are being made, that Emily has not been consulted about who possesses her, and in fact she doesn't know a blessed thing about what is transpiring in the prison cell that holds Palamon and Arcite. In any case, Palamon now asserts that Arcite would be a quote-unquote traitor if he were even to think about Emilia. Act 2, Scene 2, Line 172. This is a dangerous term because it calls into question Arcite's chivalric honor. Sure enough, that's the direction the conversation goes in, with Arcite bemoaning the possibility that Palamon would behave towards him, someone who has been practically another self to him, in a manner, quote-unquote, so unlike a noble kinsman. Act 2, Scene 2, Line 193. What follows amounts to little more than comic wrangling, with some threats thrown in for good measure. It's just as well, then, that this wrangling is cut short by the jailer, who enters to tell Arcite that he has been summoned into the presence of Duke Theseus. After Arcite leaves with the jailer, Palamon breaks into a soliloquy about the intensity of his love for Emilia. He would gladly become the little apricot tree in the garden, he says, to be near her. Quote unquote. I would bring her fruit fit for the gods to feed on. Youth and pleasure still as she tasted should be doubled on her. Act 2, Scene 2, Lines 241 through 243. Palamon is so wrought up that he even imagines a gender role reversal regarding Emilia, saying, quote unquote, I would do things of such a virtuous greatness that this lady, this blushing virgin, should take manhood to her and seek to ravish me. Act 2, Scene 2, Lines 259 through 262. Most likely, this means that Emilia would become, so to say, like a man in the audacity of her desire, and so would be the dominant partner sexually. Whatever the right interpretation may be, the jailer returns to tell Palamon that he is going to be relocated to a cell with no window overlooking the garden. I will not leave the kingdom. Arcite is determined to stay in Athens rather than leave Emilia behind. Several rustics discuss their plans to dance at a maying festival, and they also mention some games to be held in Theseus's presence. Arcite will disguise himself and try his luck. In Act 2, Scene 3, Arcite feels certain that Palamon, even if he's still in prison, has the upper hand in their Emilia-related grudge match, since, he wrongly supposes, that gentleman still enjoys the sight of her and may use his silver-tongued rhetoric to win her to his cause. So he decides to disobey Theseus's order of banishment. Quote unquote, I will not leave the kingdom, says he. Act 2, Scene 3, Line 18. Just as he makes this fateful decision, four, quote unquote, countrymen or rustics arrive on the scene and unwittingly provide Arcite with a way forwards. They engage in the usual body talk, as rustics in Elizabethan Jacobean plays tend to do, which sorts well with the ancient fertility-based underpinnings of the holidays they celebrate. May Day is coming up, and that's a spring festival not to be missed. There will also be some sporting competitions in which the rustic men are eager to take part. Arcite enters the conversation with these men and decides that the games are his best chance to re-enter Emilia's proximity. Now he has it. He says, quote unquote, I'll venture and in some poor disguise be there. Who knows whether my brows may not be girt with garlands, and happiness prefer me to a place where I may ever dwell in sight of her. Act 2, Scene 3, Lines 89 through 93. Shakespeare's Pericles, from Pericles, Prince of Tyre, would approve. Shipwrecked and washed ashore at Pentapolis, the young king took an opportunity that some honest fishermen put him on to, and, performing spectacularly in a jousting tournament, won the love of King Simonides' daughter, Thaisa. Say I ventured to set him free. What says the law then? The jailer's daughter has fallen in love with Palamon and is set upon freeing him from prison with the aim of winning his love. In Act 2, Scene 4, the jailer's daughter, alone, expresses her strong attraction to the noble prisoner, Palamon. As yet, she is in full possession of her faculties and completely aware that the social rank-based gap between her and Palamon will almost surely doom any chance of their connecting. She asks herself, quote-unquote, "Why should I love this gentleman? 'Tis odds he never will affect me. I am base." Act 2, Scene 4, Lines 1 through 2. Yet, such is the power of attraction that she is set on moving forward with her attempt, come what may. She saw the man, pitied him, and, she says, loved him. The one most likely courtesy kiss she has obtained from him is enough to sustain her hopes. What to do? The plan is admirably bold. Quote unquote, "Say I ventured to set him free. What says the law then? Thus much, for law or kindred, I will do it. And this night or tomorrow he shall love me." Act 2, Scene 4, Lines 30 through 33. The jailer's daughter's desire is frankly sexual, as is evident when she gives as the justification for her plan, quote unquote, "I would fain enjoy him." Act 2, Scene 4, Line 30. In this, we can discern a contrast between her story and that of both Palamon and Arcite. She is filled with passion but does not have access to the relative protection of the chivalric honor code or the courtly love tradition. In this sense, the jailer's daughter is more vulnerable even than the two knights who would willingly risk all for Emilia. She is capable of romantic idealism, but she is at the mercy of her passions, come what may. "I would be thought a soldier. Arcite, disguised as a countryman, wins the games and is rewarded with a courtly position as Emilia's attendant. Everyone is ordered to prepare for tomorrow morning's May Day celebration." When Act 2, Scene 5 begins, Arcite has already emerged as the victor of the games, and as is traditional in such circumstances, the host, Theseus, asks the young visitor who he is and where he hails from. Arcite replies broadly enough so as not to break his cover, putting himself forth as a gentleman, though not of the nobility, in such phrases as, quote-unquote, "I could have kept a hawk and well have hallooed to a deep cry of dogs," and, quote-unquote, "I would be thought a soldier." Act 2, Scene 5, Lines 11 through 12 and 15. Arcite's athletic and rhetorical skills are sufficient to earn praise from Theseus, Hippolyta, Emilia, and Pirithous. And he is appointed an attendant to Emilia as her birthday present. He is even allowed to kiss her hand, a nice chivalric gesture. Courtly words follow between Emilia and Arcite, and Theseus even warns his sister-in-law not to let herself get carried away with this handsome young gentleman attendant. She declares herself beyond reproach, saying she is, quote-unquote, "too wise for that, sir." Act 2, Scene 5, Line 64. "Let all the dukes and all the devils roar. He is at liberty." The jailer's daughter, having freed Palamon and packed him off to wait for her in the forest, schemes to bring him sustenance and files to remove his shackles. She also means to bring clothes so that they too may flee the realm together. By Act 2, Scene 6, the jailer's daughter has put her plan into action, declaring to the heir, quote unquote, "Let all the dukes and all the devils roar. He is at liberty. I have ventured for him." Act 2, Scene 6, Lines 1 through 2. So strong is her passion, she says, that she has done a thing that not even a man like her father would do. She has unlawfully set a prisoner free. Let the law condemn her, she says. She is resolute. Quote unquote, "I love him beyond love and beyond reason, or wit, or safety. I have made him know it." Act 2, Scene 6, Lines 11 through 12. She loves Palamon excessively and has cast caution and legal danger to the winds. The daughter means to bring Palamon some provisions and a file to free himself from his shackles, and she is clearly hoping for a sexual encounter and some gratitude from the object of her desire. Thus far, she says, she has received no acknowledgement from Arcite for her efforts, which is ominous, quote unquote, and yet he has not thanked me for what I have done. No, not so much as kissed me, and that, methinks, is not so well. Act 2, Scene 6, lines 21 through 23. We can begin to sense the deep disappointment that will soon drive the jailer's daughter beyond sanity. Thanks for listening. This audio lecture was recorded on Thursday, December 4th, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025 by Alfred J. Drake. For quotations, I have relied on the Norton Shakespeare 3rd edition, 4-volume genre-based format.